think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
They're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like in Argentina, for River Plate or Boca Juniors. Or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now, the Premier League is what the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob, Mike Orr. My co-host, Rob Rojas.
My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 175 of Low Limit Football on this September 11th, 2017. I'm your host, Joe Uccello, and as we start out year five of this show with our first sacking in the EPL, we start out year five with disappointment in qualifiers for various nationalities and with a new hope that we have the same old Champions League winner in the group stages as we kick off the event this week. We are hoping for a new champion instead of the two-time defending champion. Tonight, we'd like to wish a very happy birthday to Kay Murray and also Gabby Amato, as well as, if we missed it last week, George Dimitellis, our friends at BN Sports, all celebrating birthdays this week. And as we send our thoughts and prayers out to everyone in harm's path, whether it be because of Hurricane Irma or those defending our freedom as we remember everyone that lost their lives on 9/11. But tonight, we are going to try to start off on the right foot, kicking off a new year with a very old friend, special guest Scott Nichols from Beyond the Pitch. Rob, what is going on tonight, man? How are you?
I'm doing well, Joe. We had a great international break. I think I'm a bit disappointed depending on what nationality you stand on. But I think with the Champions League coming back tomorrow and on Wednesday, I mean, we got some really great matches to start off this new tournament. And you're right. I think hopefully, unless you are a Real Madrid fan, we could see a new champion of this tournament.
Well, I think Debbie would get mad at us for suggesting it, but you know, you got to give somebody else a chance, I guess. But let me ask you this, Rob.
Yep.
Would it be nice to see a champion from somewhere other than Spain?
Yes.
You know, seeing that.
Absolutely.
What is it? I think four of the last five were won by either Barca or Real Madrid.
Yep, that's correct. Yeah, four of the last five.
So, I mean, yeah, it's time. I don't even know that I want to see Bayern do it. Obviously for me, of course, I want to see Juventus do it. But if it wasn't meant to be Juventus,
maybe an English club, maybe a little club in Paris trying to fight for that title.
You know, I think of the uproar if PSG won after everything that's happened.
I mean, it wouldn't be surprising considering the team that they have.
No, of course not. But and that's what I mean. That would be the trigger. You know, to really kick things off. That's for sure. It's like all of a sudden, you know, PSG spends all this money. Maybe in the January window, they go out and maybe they replace their keeper. I don't know. Maybe they pick up somebody that's not cup tied and they make a run in this thing and they actually win it. Can you imagine everyone talking about financial fair play and all that crazy stuff and how PSG bought their way to the title and all that, you know, those kinds of things.
It'd be ridiculous.
It would be the first topic. I think that would come out of something like that. So hopefully, if it does happen, that let's say it's PSG or even someone like Borussia Dortmund or like a Napoli or something, you know, somebody outside the box, even Spurs, you know, somebody outside the box. I think it would be cool to see it, and I'd like to see how the fans react to it. You know, I'm sure people would not appreciate, you know, the ratings of the TV people wouldn't appreciate let's say, a Spurs-Monaco Champions League final, right? I mean, that's probably a disaster ratings-wise. Yeah, I think their best hope is an El Clasico, right? I mean,
oh, definitely. Yeah. I think that's their hope every year.
Yeah, so I mean, yeah, so it sucks to be the TV people, but in the end, I mean, we want. I think we're due for a change. So we'll have
Like I said, last non-Spanish champion was Bayern Munich, and that was 4 years ago.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah, time for a change.
When they beat Dortmund, exactly. So, let me ask you, the news of Frank de Boer getting sacked today, expected?
Very, very fast is all I can say.
Yeah.
I think the "what have you done for me lately" quote that we've always been talking about has been really, really been taken seriously.
Yeah, if there was ever a knee-jerk reaction, this was it. Now, granted, De Boer, you know, comes over. I just got done watching ESPN FC, and De Boer comes over as damaged goods, if you really think about it. You know, his unsuccessful run at Internazionale, you know, maybe it was a little too soon, but I think shame on the folks at Palace, because if you're looking to make a change, a cultural change at Palace and kind of go in a different direction, and you think Frank de Boer is your guy, you can't sack him after four matches. I don't care what those four matches look like.
Here's a report that I just saw here on the BBC. It says here that Palace were looking for his replacement just 2 weeks ago.
Wow. And rumor is that replacement's Roy Hodgson. Mm. They also said that they have – I've also heard through the grapevine they've approached Sam Allardyce, but Sam Allardyce said no thank you. You know, Hodgson's another one that I don't know that he's going to do a great job at Palace. I think Palace is doomed to failure. You know, I want to say that we even predicted that when we were talking about our previews. We might have said that with Harry Harris, that Palace was one of those teams that might be going down. So
right.
I've got it all written down, and obviously we've got the podcast up. So for those of you that didn't catch any of our league previews, we did those as special individual podcasts. So definitely go to our website or our iTunes page and take a look. But I'm surprised Bilic obviously earned himself a stay of execution today with a 2-0 victory over Huddersfield, which is nice to see. I like Bilic as a coach, so obviously he's going to stay there a little bit longer. So we'll see what happens. So, Rob, let's do the trivia before we actually talk about our opening thoughts topic, and then we'll get our guest in here real quick. You ready for a trivia?
Yes, I am.
All right, so Dele Alli, you all know who Dele Alli is, Spurs player, right? Scored while we were away on our big break with doing the show, the big show. He scored 30 Premier League goals in his career before his 22nd birthday.
Right.
It's 2, 4, 6. He is the 8th player to do that. Okay. Can you name the other 7? So Dele Alli scored 30 Premier League goals before his 22nd birthday. Can you name the other 7?
Okay.
So 1, 2, 3 of the names you will absolutely get. I'm almost positive. Maybe even 4.
Mm.
Okay. So you might have a little trouble with 3 of them. But 4, I think 3 definitely you'll get. 4 you'll probably get, but the other 3 are going to be tough. So we'll come back to that at the end of the show. Let's hit opening thoughts. And opening thoughts is something that actually, Rob, you and I have kind of been talking about a little bit coming up, but it was made official last week during the week that the Premier League has changed their transfer window timing. So the transfer window now in the Premier League at the 2018-2019 season will close on the Thursday before the league kicks off. So they've moved up the window from the 31st of August and really taken that out of play. I'd like your initial thoughts on it, Rob, as to, you know, what you think about the whole thing. Good for football, bad for football. I mean, your overall thoughts.
I think it's pointless. Okay. To be honest, I think it's pointless. I think, okay, obviously there are a lot of differences between each of the leagues in Europe. They all start at different times. We saw that with the Premier League starting much earlier than the other seasons. Sorry, the other leagues across Europe. Mm-hmm. I just think it must be really frustrating for other clubs to want to get their players that they want from Spain or Italy or Germany to try to get them out earlier than before. I mean, this is what, a 2-3 week loss for them is what Premier League would start middle of August instead of instead that would be like it wouldn't be till the end of the transfer window.
Correct. So yeah, I mean, for me, you got to also keep in mind the fact that although I don't think this is a minor fact in my opinion, I'll explain why. After the EPL deadline of the Thursday before the season starts, players can still move out of England, but they cannot come in. So they can't bring players in, but they can move players out. This is a minor thing to me. It exists, and I think it could come into play on some of the medium-sized transfers, but it's minor to me because usually players are moving into England. If players are moving out of England, you usually see that move outside of England happen fast, you know, earlier on in the process. They're kind of going to clean house, and then they're going to go select their targets and then bring them in. So I think it's a minor piece, but you know, things like Riyad Mahrez, who almost moved by at the end of the transfer window this year. You could see Mahrez move, or a guy like Mahrez move out of England, okay, move him to Spain, move him to France or what have you, but then Leicester City's not able to bring somebody back in.
Right.
And I think that could be an issue, and I think the issue would actually be, like you and I have talked about before, where this would signal the close of the EPL window would virtually signal the close of the window in general. I think you may see the big boys like Real Madrid and Barcelona, you know, continue to move big players throughout Europe. But I think once you close the English door, I think it is the English door holds a lot of dominoes that fall for other countries, and I think that those dominoes would no longer fall. So you've in essence closed the transfer window. Okay, so that for me is part one of this news. Part two of this news for me is the focus that these English clubs will now have to place on the preseason. You know, where normally you see these clubs, you know, and we even saw it with Rob between you and me with Roma Juventus. We saw it in the the Juve Barcelona game that we played in the International Champions Cup here. These players are not getting full 90-minute games in those scenarios, right? You're giving them 30 minutes here, 45 minutes there. You're going 7 subs, 8 subs, 9 subs. You know, you're feeling everybody out. Now, at this point, you're going to have to feel everybody out and then make your decisions, because once you get into league play, that door is shut. And you're not going to make that change that you may feel you need because you need a better solution at left wing back because of the match you played against Chelsea on Sunday, right? So I think that can have an effect in terms of what we will see as quality of play in the preseason. You know, and that's a good that's a good thing for the folks in the United States. Let's be honest, Rob. It's good for the folks in Australia. It's good for the folks in China and Japan. It's good where these teams go and play their preseason matches. That's where we're going to – those people are going to benefit.
And I think – sorry, Joe.
No, go.
I think this will allow teams to really get their business done on time. It would really make it more stressful and really focused on what they really need to do to get these players rather than, oh, that we just wait until the end of the month to do it.
Right, right. You know, you have to ramp up that focus. It could also cause more issues. It could cause more mistakes. You know, so let's obviously keep an eye. The first couple windows, I think, are going to be interesting to see.
Yes.
You know, next year's summer window, especially coming off of a World Cup, and probably more importantly, the year after. Those where there's a lull in the competitive summer. Then that's where we might see some issues there. But otherwise, you know, it'll be interesting to see how things play out in the English Premier League. So, joining us now on we'll table that discussion because joining us now on Low Limit Football from Beyond the Pitch is Scott Nichols. Scott, how are you tonight, man?
Guys, I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm fantastic, man. How are things going with BTP? I mean, you guys have had some big stuff come up between the NBC tie-in, which we talked about with Phil Brown when we last had him on the show, to the hookup with the folks at These Football Times. Man, you guys are doing big, big things.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's great. It's an ever-expanding venture that Phil's, you know, very graciously had me involved in. We just interviewed Garth Crooks the other day. Obviously, we've got the Danny Higginbottom show. Mm-hmm. For those who don't know, Danny Higginbottom's a Manchester United, former Man United player, Stoke player. He's on Sky Sports. So he does a show with us a lot. And Kenny Sampson too, we interviewed. Glenn Hoddle's coming up as well, so that should be fun. So yeah, and we've just did a partnership with Manchester City as well for the Manchester City USA podcast. So lots of really cool stuff, and I'm really excited about the TFT stuff.
Yeah, definitely. It's been fun to watch you guys grow in such a short period of time, and we certainly, Rob and I, definitely the beneficiaries of it to say the least. So let's jump into it, man. Let's kick off the Champions League. Obviously, competition comes up tomorrow. Rob and I kind of talked about it quickly at the beginning of the show that maybe it's time for a new champion. Four of the last five champions have come from Spain. Obviously, the last two have come from Madrid. So it almost feels like it's time. We want to see another country. We want to see another team, maybe some upstart, somebody win this Champions League this year. So given that focus to you, Scott, what's the one team that you kind of sit there and look at and go, yeah, let's see those guys win it?
I think the obvious one to pull out of the hat is going to be Paris Saint-Germain. Honestly, in my heart of hearts, I think Real Madrid is in the best position to win it. And I think I would be correct in saying that no team has won it three times in a row, but I could be wrong. I've been wrong before. I'll be wrong again. But PSG would be great. But PSG would be great to see them win it. I think they've come under sort of a lot of sort of unfair scrutiny because of what they've... And have they flouted the FFP rules a little bit? Possibly. But it's just... FFP seems to have not been taken seriously for a very long time until something like this has happened. Then everyone sort of decided to be like, okay, great, let's now we'll take it seriously. So look, I'm looking forward to seeing Neymar and Mbappe and Cavani play up front together. The only possible thing that I think of with PSG is that they went after Fabinho because they need like a midfield destroyer. And they don't really have that. And that sort of showed in that sort of capitulation against Barcelona last season, mm-hmm. if you know what I mean. So, and I don't think people like Adrian Rabiot are sort of the right person to sort of play that midfield destroyer role. So we'll see. But I think if it's going to be anyone, it'll be PSG.
I agree.
I'll just jump in. Sorry, yes, guys. Please. I'll just jump in here and say, Scott, that yes, the team have won the Champions League, well, the European Cup three times in a row. Bayern Munich have done it. Ajax have done it. And Real Madrid have done it, but they've done it five times in a row back in the early 50s.
Oh, okay. Well, I did say that I could be wrong and that I've been wrong before. I'll be wrong again. Yeah. And you guys, look, if I'm going to be proved wrong by anybody, it would be you three. So look, you know.
Well, you know, you also got to remember that Rob's talking about, you know, the 1950s. I mean, we're going back 60 years in the competition to find that. So I would say
it's like three teams, right?
Yes, Ajax, yeah. Bayern, and Real.
So really, in the modern era, it absolutely has not happened. Nope. You know, so it'll be interesting. I going back to what you said, I agree with you about the PSG. In fact, that's kind of the one name that we brought up that I couldn't bring up Juventus because I didn't want to be a homer or anything like that. But PSG is the one that is probably the most intriguing. And at the same time, you worry that if they do happen to cross that finish line and raise that trophy, that the first thing people will focus on is the whole financial fair play stuff. And I hope that if it does come to that, PSG does win the Champions League, that it doesn't taint the trophy, because in the end, let's be honest, all the clubs in Europe are trying to buy their way to the top. So why should what PSG did be any different from Real Madrid or Manchester City or AC Milan or any other sides?
No, totally. And I think we're looking at a new era in modern, I don't want to say modern football, but football in general. I mean, what it is now, I think, is that we're seeing, you know, Neymar. There was a lot of talk about Neymar going to Paris Saint-Germain, and people lamented that he might play his first game against Guingamp, or however you might pronounce that. I'm apologies for any fans who are sort of listening and I've mispronounced that name. But, you know, I thought, well, he's not going to play many high-profile games in that league, and he's not going to play many high-profile games in La Liga either, realistically. However, what a lot of players move for now is they all want to win the Champions League. It's all about the Champions League now. Like, as a Chelsea fan, I'm an unabashed Chelsea fan. I think that's pretty clear from my Twitter on match days, okay? Now, so I like Chelsea winning the Premier League. Don't get me wrong. I love it. Like, I would love for us to win it again this season. But the real thing that I really want is the Champions League, and I think so do players.
I'll just jump in, Scott, and say thank you again for coming on. First, I do want to talk about that beloved Chelsea of yours. Just going, but before I do, just going real quick to the odds checker, the odds, what the bookies are saying for the Champions League winners. Obviously, Real Madrid are the favorite at 15-4, but the top four seems very, sorry, the other top four in the conversation is PSG in second at 13-2, Bayern and Barcelona both at 7-1, and Manchester City in 11th, tied with Manchester United to 11-1. Do you agree with this? Is there a team that you perhaps maybe favorite much more over another, or do you think that this is correct?
Well, I think that the English teams, historically, the English teams have done well. Recently, not so much. I would agree. The thing about Manchester City is you never really know what version of Manchester City is going to turn up. So I wouldn't, 11th best in Europe, based on that, possibly, I would agree with that. I mean, I think that Real Madrid have to be the favourites. I don't know that Barcelona should be ranked that highly, because I just don't know what version of Barcelona that we have at the moment. I think that, any team that has Messi in it has to be taken seriously. However, you look at the reinforcements they've made, like Semedo, good player, but it doesn't feel like a Barcelona player to me. Neither does Paulinho. He's been about as useful for Brazil recently as he was for Tottenham when he played for them. So they're going through a bit of sort of a tumultuous time at the moment. The Neymar transfer, they've replaced him with, Ousmane Dembele, and, Dembele, he might win a Golden Ball. He might win a Golden Ball one day. He might win a Ballon d'Or. He very well may do, but not right now. And I just struggle with them. They're my biggest sort of struggle this season is Barcelona, frankly.
Definitely. Definitely. It's going to be really interesting to see what he can do to replace Neymar, which is big shoes to fill. Going now to your beloved Chelsea. They're in a group which is really interesting to see. They're in a group with Atletico Madrid. They're in a group with Roma and a group with Quaribag as well, of Azerbaijan. Mm-hmm. Just looking at this group, I think a lot of people said that this was considered the group of death, considering the top three teams in that group. What do you see this Chelsea side moving forward in the in this group? And what do you think is maybe one of the decisive games in this group?
I think the decisive game could well be the Atletico Madrid at home on the 5th of December. That's what they closed the group out with. That could determine the winner of the group. Honestly, it's probably going to determine, it could determine who finishes between first and third, because, Roma's a good team and Atletico Madrid's a good team. Look, when they came out of the hat, I thought, Christ, this is a tough draw for Chelsea. Mm-hmm. And then even though Carabag, I don't expect them to cause too many problems for Chelsea at home. It's a long way to Azerbaijan, where they play. And and that's the biggest thing for me, is the travel that's involved with that. And that worries me, going away all the way to Azerbaijan. So look, maybe they pick up a point off of teams just because of the travel involved. It's a long way to go. There's a hectic schedule for all these teams. I'm going to the game against Roma and against Atletico Madrid. Couldn't get tickets for the Carabag game. It was actually sold out very, very quickly. I wasn't quick enough, so there you go. I expect Chelsea to qualify from this group. I think it's going to be a toss-up between Chelsea or Atletico Madrid between first and second, and then I think Roma's going to finish third. I can't see them qualifying from this group. But look, the Champions League, anything could happen. We've seen it happen before. Chelsea finished third in a group with Juventus one year. They had, 10 points that year, the best third place finish. So look, and that was the other one, the Europa League. So, but I think that Chelsea go through. It's a good opportunity to rotate some players as well in those games against Carabag. I think we'll see Christensen play tomorrow, Batshuayi too. So,
Definitely. I think Antonio Conte definitely needs that depth that they so desperately need. And I think in the Champions League, they could definitely get that. Looking at the other English clubs in the Champions League, obviously we have Manchester United in a group with Basel, Benfica, and CSKA Moscow. We have Liverpool in a group with Spartak Moscow, Sevilla, and Maribor. We have Manchester City in a group with Shakhtar Donetsk, Feyenoord, and Napoli. And finally, we have, I think, one of the hardest ones. We have Spurs in a group with Borussia Dortmund, Real Madrid, and Apoel. Out of the English clubs, which one do you think might underperform and not do well as expected in their
Tottenham. Group? Tottenham. 100% Tottenham. Because it's just a very difficult group, and they haven't done anything in my mind really to improve upon what they had last season. And now, I don't believe the Wembley curse is a real thing. Let me just say, I think that they will get over it. But what I do think is real is that it's a cup final for everybody who comes there. We saw it with Burnley, right, the other day at home. You know, they came in and they scored the late goal because Burnley are thinking, well, we've never played at, you know, Wembley, or at least not for a very long time. And our fans get a day out, Wembley, home of football. So I think that that's a really, really big disadvantage to them. But I do think they can get over it. I do think that they can sort of get a result out of maybe Dortmund and Apoel at Wembley. But I can't. I can see them being beaten twice by Real Madrid, at least beaten once by Borussia Dortmund as well. So that's three losses. And even if they win the other three games, let's say, against each one, well, they can't. If they win the other two games, they've only got 6 points. So it's, look, I really don't think Tottenham can escape from this group. I think they'll get into the Europa League, but honestly, I would be absolutely shocked if they got out of that group. Absolutely shocked.
Right. Right, I think so. I think for a lot of fans of and the expectation that Spurs have been getting for quite some time, that it would be definitely a disaster if they get knocked out of the Champions League and European competitions overall. Just looking at these groups, my last question, thank you again, Scott, for coming on. Just looking at these groups moving forward, which one do you think are you're most interested of? You know, which one do you think is going to be the most even and hard out one that's going to be fought for?
Well, I think the most even group is could be Chelsea's group, realistically, with Roma, Atletico Madrid, and Chelsea in that sort of three-way sort of battle for if the bigger clubs in Europe, let's say. You know, then you look at the other group there. I'm actually excited about the Monaco, Porto, and Leipzig group. I think that'll be a fun one to watch. I think Leipzig is sort of a dark horse in this year's tournament. I think if they can get to the round of 16, you know, over two games, I think with their dynamism and the young players that they've got in that team, I don't think they have any fear. I don't think they can go ahead and win it. But then again, nobody thought that Porto and Monaco could get to the final the year that Jose Mourinho won the Champions League with Porto. I mean, you know, and actually, Monaco beat Chelsea in the Champions League semi-finals that year. I remember Fernando Morientes scoring and breaking my little Chelsea blue heart. So there you go. So I remember that. I remember being there. It was awful. But those are probably the two most interesting groups for me. Obviously, I'm a bit biased because I'm a Chelsea fan. But you know, the games between Atletico Madrid and Roma will be very entertaining. Man United's group, you know, with Basel, we've seen what they've done to English teams in the past in Zurich. So, you know, we'll see, or in Basel rather. So we'll see what happens in that group too. But the other groups just seem like they have sort of two clear teams that are going to go through. Bayern Munich and Paris Saint-Germain are going to go through from Group B. You know, Barcelona and Juventus, they'll go through from their group. You know, Liverpool and Sevilla most likely in Group E as well. So it's like Manchester City and Napoli in Group F. You know, I know Shakhtar are a good team, but again, I expect Man City and Napoli to go through from that group. So let's keep an eye on Chelsea's group, and let's keep an eye on the Leipzig group too.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I agree, you know, and even in that Group G, like you pointed out with Leipzig, Monaco, and Porto, all three of those teams are going to have a very tough road battle to go to Turkey and play Besiktas.
They're no joke. So, yeah, that's a very balanced group. Let me just, sorry to jump in, but I think that is a very balanced group. Just, yeah, carry on what you're saying. I'm sorry.
No, and I agree. I was going to say that's probably, looking at the groups, I mean, everyone likes to call that Group C group with the Chelsea, Roma, Atleti as the quote-unquote group of death, but probably the most balanced group, like you said, which then at that point would be the group of death, would be Group G, because any of those four teams could win because their road battles are going to be so tough. We've got young teams in Monaco and Leipzig, and we've got an experienced side in Porto that could really cause trouble, you know, across the board. So I think that Group G is really going to be that toss-up group that I think no one wants to ever pick.
You know, definitely. Yeah. I wouldn't want to pick a group winner from it. I really wouldn't. My initial thought is to pick Monaco, but having lost, you know, players like Mbappe, you know, you just sort of think, he was an integral part of that. And Timo Bakayoko too, mm-hmm. last season. I know they got very far last year, but was it lightning in a bottle? You know, you never really know, do you, with these sort of like little intriguing stories. So, look, I'm really, 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 apart from Chelsea's group, I'm looking forward to Group G a lot, actually. And I'm looking forward to seeing Tottenham crash out of Group H because, you know, I have to. So.
last part that I want to add about Group G is the play of Timo Werner at Leipzig right now, who's been, I believe, he scored again on the weekend. So, you know, you've got an in-form striker, an in-form young striker. And then, like you said, not only is it losing Mbappe and losing Timo Bakayoko, but
But obviously Bernardo Silva, Benjamin Mendy, you know, there was a huge dismantling at Monaco that went on this
right,
summer.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's going to be difficult for them to kind of recapture that lightning in a bottle. I do want to ask you about both Manchester group, Manchester teams. Obviously, you know, City and Manchester United, especially on the side of United, you'd almost think that they'd paid the folks off at UEFA to get such a soft group.
They always get an easy group. Look at their groups for the last God knows how many years. They get always get an easy group. Yeah. Always get an easy group.
And you could say that about City as well. You know, look at how many hard groups they've gotten.
No, yeah, exactly. Yeah. They've always been in a tough
group.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah,
no, yeah, you're right. No, what you were saying, yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, although this group F, they probably looked at this group and really the only game they're circling is that Napoli game. You know, even though Napoli lost.
Sorry, Joe, that's going to be a really good game. Both sides are going to be very, very entertaining. I mean, yeah. Sarri against Guardiola, I think that's something that has to be must-see TV.
Yeah, I agree. And also in the way the two teams play, their attacking style for both of them. Both are very strong up top, both very good in the midfield. And you know, this Napoli side, you've got to remember, I know they lost both legs 3-1 to Real Madrid in last year's Champions League knockout stages, but if you remember, Napoli was the one that went out on the front foot and scored the first goal in both of those matches. It just was a matter of them not being able to hold on against the eventual champion. So I think in terms of City, definitely the quote-unquote tougher road. I think, Scott, you know, what you said in terms of, you know, City and Napoli, really the two choices there moving forward in Group F, I think is appropriate. I think United, you know, just to focus back on United and kind of to turn it into a question to you, Scott, with Benfica, CSKA Moscow, and Basel in this particular Group A, and certainly not nearly as talented as this Manchester United squad is currently, if they don't win the group, but let's say they advance, isn't that a huge disappointment for them?
Oh, they should be winning this group completely. I mean, I think if you look at Manchester United's team, I've been saying, even the Premier League, I think they strengthen depth-wise, I think they have the strongest squad in the Premier League, in my opinion, after signing players like Matic, you know, in the summer, Lukaku as well, Ibrahimovic coming back as well. They've got other players who are injured right now, like Marcus Rojo, who can play a role for them in defence, still injured. You know, Luke Shaw at left-back can still play a role for them eventually. So look, I think they've got a lot of good players in a lot of good position. And if they don't win that group, then, yeah, I think it is a massive disappointment. I mean, the only other team that I could think that may come close and, you know, because, look, anything can happen in the Champions League, right? Mm-hmm. That's why we love it. That's why we watch it. But Benfica, probably the only team that I would expect to possibly get a result from Manchester United. But, look, I think Man United go through instead of Benfica from that group. And I think Man United go through as group winners. If they don't, you're right, it's a huge disappointment.
And it really opens them up to the first place teams. So you know, you just even scanning through a couple of groups. Group B is PSG and Bayern Munich. You're going to get the better side of the two out of that group. Juve, Barcelona, which you would expect, you're going to get the better of those two teams. You know, however they're playing now. So you're really going to be in quite the pickle if you end up second in a group.
Yeah, the only thing that I can imagine that you'd be hoping for, if you're Manchester United and you finish second in that group somehow, is that you know, with no disrespect to any of the teams in Group G, but you're hoping for the first place team in Group G, I would have thought. That is the only possible outcome that I think that you'd accept in the round of 16 of the Champions League if you failed to qualify first from that group.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now I want to focus on tomorrow's big matchup. You know, probably the one everyone's got circled for their reason to skip work, and that would be the Juve Barcelona matchup tomorrow at the Nou Camp. Missing a couple of players on both sides. Arda Turan is a loss for Barcelona, but I'm just seeing now the injury report. Sami Khedira and Mario Mandzukic are supposedly going to be out of this one for Juve, and we still don't know the status of Giorgio Chiellini. I don't know that he's going to be either on the bench and available or if he's going to start. Looking back at these two teams, the last time the two faced in a competitive matchup, and I was kind of joking about this before the Champions League final, Juve shut out Barca for 180 minutes over two legs in the knockout stages in last year's Champions League. Now, I had a front row seat to the Neymar magic in what was one of his last games in New York City, where Barca exacted some revenge on them. But what do we expect out of this Barcelona side? They've won their first three matches going into the La Liga season. They look like Messi's back on the right foot, even though he didn't look all that great in World Cup qualifying for Argentina. And some pretty key injuries here for Juventus going into this one. What do you expect out of this one tomorrow?
It's really tough to predict. And actually, just to go back to Chiellini, UEFA actually has him as out with a calf injury for this game. So they're not. UEFA certainly isn't expecting him to play a role in this game, which could sort of tip the scales in the favour of Barcelona, I think, just because, you know, they're trying to figure out that makeshift defence there, Juventus at the minute. Look, it's tough because, you know, I don't want to. I never really take Messi's international form. I sort of take it with a pinch of salt. You know, he seems to be this little magician for Barcelona, and then sometimes, whether it be the coaching, or the way that he's being told to play, or, you know, how he feels about playing for Argentina or the teammates around him, whatever it is, he doesn't seem to produce the same sort of level of magic as consistently for Argentina. Mm-hmm. So I'm not really that worried about him. I'm just worried about Barcelona's mentality in general. They're going to know that it was, you know, over the last competitive games, you know, they lost 3-0 and they drew 0-0. So Dybala's in form. Douglas Costa's coming to the team. Higuain's going to play. You know, we know what Juventus can do. Mm-hmm. But look, I think that at the Nou Camp, at Barcelona, you know, with Barcelona, with Messi firing on all cylinders, Ousmane Dembele's going to be looking to impress as well. I would be shocked if it ended 0-0.
Right.
Let's just put it that way. And I think that realistically, with Chiellini missing, you know, I'm looking, and also, you know, Bonucci going too, I'm really, really sort of pushing this in the favour of Barcelona. I think it'd be sort of 1-0 or 2-0 to Barcelona on the night.
Yeah, it's hard to pick against Barcelona, especially given the form that they're on and the key injuries that you've said. And I didn't know that Chiellini has been labelled as out. So there was always a big chance of that happening when he suffered that injury on national team duty. So that now here we are again with him being injured. So I want to ask you about one more match before we let you go, and that's going to be the Wednesday matchup.
Sure.
I'd like you to take off the London hat for a moment, and I'd like you to look at Tottenham Dortmund. You know, just looking again, when you factor in the injuries here, Dortmund again is riddled with injuries. Rafa Guerrero is going to be out of this one. Marco Reus, Sebastian Rode, Andre Schürrle. But obviously, big loss is the Dele Alli red card that's going to keep him out of the Spurs lineup. So how do you see this one playing out with two very, very high-flying attacking sides?
Well, I think you're exactly right. Dele Alli missing is going to be huge for Tottenham. He's sort of the heartbeat of that midfield, right? I mean, you know, I was at the Everton. I was at Goodison Park at the weekend watching Everton play Tottenham. And I will say, for whatever, if you've seen the highlights, I mean, it looked like Tottenham dominated the game. For the first half an hour, Everton sort of had Tottenham's number a little bit. And I know Alli was playing, but they had Moussa Sissoko in midfield. And he's just not a very good player, guys. You know, I mean, right. So he may have to play in this game against Dortmund. And Dortmund still have some quality attacking players in this team. Mm-hmm. So I just worry about Wembley. I really worry about Wembley. Do I think that Tottenham on their day can beat Borussia Dortmund? Yes, I do. Do I think that Tottenham Hotspur is a better team up and down than Borussia Dortmund? Yes, I do. But I just, honestly, I'm very worried. And the wild card in all of this, remember, is Pulisic. You know, let's see what he can do, you know, at Wembley Stadium. Put him under the microscope if he starts, you know. So, honestly, I think the best case scenario for Tottenham in this situation is probably a draw, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate. A draw at home is, you know, you usually want to win your home matches, so that's going to be a tough sell for the Spurs.
I would love to be proved wrong, but just right now with Tottenham's form at Wembley, I think they're going to have it in their head. It helps that they just smashed Everton at home, and Everton, like, after the first half hour, were absolutely woeful, and Tottenham were very good. But at the end of the day, you know, Borussia Dortmund's a better team than Everton, and they know what it's like. They know. They've seen it happen at Wembley. They've been beat there by Chelsea. They got held there by Burnley. They were held there by Henk last year. So, look, it's going to be I think it'll be tough. I think it'll be tough for him, and I think it's going to be a draw.
All right. Then I want to ask you one more Champions League question, then I have one more EPL question before we let you go tonight. Give me a champion. I know it's awful early. We're talking September, and we're predicting a game in May. But give me a champion.
Real Madrid.
Yeah.
Asensio is like the second coming of Ronaldo, it seems, and Ronaldo is still Ronaldo, and like Isco is just, I don't know why anyone, there was a time where people were sort of a bit down on Isco, but I've always thought he was a quality player. Toni Kroos, you know, all these fantastic players, and they can defend as well. That's the differences with Real Madrid and Zidane's way of playing, I think, is that, you know, they can be this free-flowing, you know, almost just sort of one unit just going forward, all 11 players, even the goalkeeper, if you really wanted, I think they could do it. And then, but they can all defend as well. And I think he's got them absolutely drilled to a T, Zinedine Zidane. I think he's a fantastic coach. And I just, it's hard to look past anyone but them. If I did have to look past, like we talked at the top of the segment here, it would have to be PSG. I'd love to be able to say Chelsea. We've done it before in worse circumstances. Trust me, we have. But I can't see past those two teams for this season.
I agree. So my last question before we let you go, I want to put your EPL hat back on. Because much was made this weekend of the Sadio Mane foul for Liverpool against Manchester City's goalkeeper. On the weekend, earned him a straight red card. City was up 1-0 at the time of the foul, and it really went completely downhill for Liverpool from there to the 5-0 drubbing. But I want to focus back on the foul. There's been a lot of debate all over the board as to whether this was a red card offense, a straight red card, a yellow card, whether it was a foul, whether, you know, it's been all over the place. So I'd like your 2 cents on the play and to let me know what you think about what the punishment should have been.
I think when you look at it, it goes over, the ball goes over the top there, and initially, when you watch it just in fast motion, you know, in normal speed, let's say, I say fast motion because the opposite, I guess, is slow motion, but in normal speed, it goes up for the ball and he sticks his leg up. The problem is that he jumps and puts his leg up very high. The goalkeeper does come for it, but it's... Some people have been using that as an argument that, well, the goalkeeper put himself in that position, you know, but I don't really agree with that, because even without looking at it in slow motion, Mane must know what his surroundings are, must know that the goalkeeper's coming. That was my view of it. And then when I actually saw the contact happen and I saw his foot go very high, I just thought, he's going to get red carded here. He's going to get a red card. And I normally will sort of champion the defenders making the strong tackles. I didn't think Gary Cahill's tackle on the first day of the season was a red card. I don't think there's any way, shape or form in the world that was a red card. But this Mane challenge, it's a high foot, his studs are showing, and it's at the goalkeeper's head height, and they're both jumping. So anyone who thinks it isn't a red card, it just sort of baffles me a little bit. And then if you watch the slow motion replay, Mane's got his eyes on the ball, looks where the goalkeeper is, looks back to the ball. So he knows where the goalkeeper is. He knows, and it's a risk-reward thing, right? I agree with Alan Shearer coming out on Match of the Day in the UK saying, if that's my striker, I want him to go for that ball. And I agree with him. I would want my striker to go for that ball as well. But you got to face the punishment if it goes wrong. And look, Mane's not a dirty player. He's not a dirty player. It was just an unfortunate incident. And look, he'll get his ban. I would hope he only gets banned for a game. I don't think it's violent conduct necessarily. I just think it was an unfortunate incident that had to result in him being sent from the field. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And I think 3 games would be a little bit too much for him, because I don't think he's a malicious player. But look, we'll see what happens. I have a feeling it will end up being 3 games, but I think that would be a little bit harsh. But my opinion is that it is a red card. And the other incident involving Alfie Mawson and... I forget the actual whoever did the high foot on Alfie Mawson. It didn't feel the same to me. It wasn't quite as a high of a foot. There was no studs showing for me in that. It seemed a little bit different. And I think you could have given that a yellow card. But look, I'm not a professional referee. Mark Clattenburg is, and he says Marnie's situation was a yellow card. So take that and, you know, do what you want with it, I guess.
Well, I couldn't have said it better myself. I mean, I agree with you 100%. I did think it was a straight red. I think any punishment after the fact, I think, would be a little excessive. I do think it was a play that was in the moment.
But I agree with you. Where Mane goes wrong is when he jumps with his foot in the air like that, knowing that the keeper is coming out. I think that's if he's lunging for the ball, and he never looks back at the keeper. Let's say his eyes are squarely on the ball and he lunges for the ball. I think you probably can give him a little bit more of a pass. But when he gets so high up in the air, he knows where the keeper is, and he comes in studs up like that. I think I think he puts himself in that position that. It's a huge risk, but a huge reward. It's either he pops that ball over his head and we're tied at one, or foot comes to the face and we're red card and this game is over. I think that the game is decided, unfortunately, in the moment. But I think the red card was appropriate because just in the position he puts himself in, it creates such a dangerous situation that it's a safety issue. I think that if it was done differently, maybe he doesn't get that red card. But I don't think it is a quote unquote yellow card offense, like Mark Clattenburg saying. I do think it is something that is so dangerous that warranted the red. So I'm kind of with you on that completely. Scott, I do want to thank you for coming on and joining us on the show tonight. You're the first guest of our fifth year of doing this show, so we feel blessed to have you join us and. Give our best to Phil and everybody else at Beyond the Pitch.
I absolutely will. And hey, the pleasure is always mine coming on here, especially knowing that I'm the first guest of your fifth year. Makes me really happy to know that. So there you go. Thank you very much for having me on.
Cheers. Have a good night.
You too. Bye-bye.
And that was Scott Nichols from Beyond the Pitch. I wanted to get his take. Rob, you and I haven't talked about the Sadio Mane call as of yet, but I'm sure you've seen the replay. I'm sure you've seen the video of the foul. So obviously I gave my two cents there, but I'd like you to get your part in.
I think I would have to agree with Scott. I think it was perceived as maybe accidental. I think anyone with a harsh reaction to that would have assumed that it's a red. But I think it's just these are some of the things you really can't control, you know? I don't think it's I don't think like what Scott said is it's violent conduct or anything like that. But
right.
I think you have to just accept the punishment and go for it and just not argue against it.
Yeah,
unfortunately, that's how it has to work. You know, a lot of people want to say that I didn't do this, I didn't mean it or anything like that. But if Mark Kallenberg is making this decision and obviously with the experience that he has, you just got to accept it.
Yeah, it's not violent conduct so much that it's aggressive play.
Exactly.
That's what I'd say. So, just an interesting thought. Let's look at the groups. I'm not going to write these down or these predictions or anything. We've got games. We've got matches of the week that we're going to put out there for everybody now as we look at our week ahead in a moment. But just looking at the Champions League real quick, Rob, I think what we should do is probably go through each group, maybe pick a winner and a runner-up, and then just move through the groups and give our two cents on each group. So, I'm going to ask you first on Manchester United, the Group A, Manchester United, Benfica, CSKA Moscow, and Basel.
You just want me to give me two, or you want me to?
No, I want you to give me your two cents and your opinion on who's going to be first and who's going to be second.
Yeah, I think this is pretty much a straightforward group. I think Manchester United are expected to win this group, which is why I'm having them at first. I think for second, it's going to be a battle between Basel, Benfica, and CSKA Moscow, obviously teams with a vast experience in the Champions League, but I think you have to give the benefit of the doubt to the Portuguese side here. So I'm going to have to go with Benfica runner up and Manchester United to win the group and to go to the Europa League. I'll say Basel.
Yeah, I was going to just say the exact same thing. Man U, like we had talked about with Scott previously, a second place finish for United is a huge disappointment in my opinion here. So I think we should expect them to win. I don't see any reason why they shouldn't win this group. They're way too talented compared to the other sides. And I do think Benfica is definitely the second-place team on this side. I think both of these teams should be pretty handily. This is going to be the kind of thing, and I'd have to look at the matchups as to when they happen, but you could easily see United and Benfica ending up with 6 points each, moving into a third match against each other in this one, regardless of play. I do think Basel will probably take that third place spot here. I do think they're, the Swiss side is very, very tough. They've proven themselves time and time again in these European competitions. So I would go with Basel as well. Group B, PSG, Anderlecht, Bayern Munich, Celtic. I'm going to give my opinions here first, I guess. It was kind of surprising to see Bayern Munich lose on the weekend in their Bundesliga matchup. PSG is really getting it going now, Rob, where you see them start to incorporate Kylian Mbappe into the play. Neymar has looked at home from the minute he stepped on the pitch, and whether he's scoring the goals or he's setting them up, he's been doing it all over. Really looks comfortable in his time away from the spotlight at Barcelona here, and I think it's going to serve him really, really well. So for me, you know, I'm going to actually take PSG to win this game or win this group. I'm going to take Bayern Munich second, but it will be very, very close. It wouldn't shock me if these two teams played to 0-0 or 1-1 draws against each other in the group stages. I think Celtic is going to take the third spot, though, and go to Europa over Anderlecht. You know, obviously, with they've had a nice little turnaround over there, so that's going to be my prediction. PSG 1, Bayern 2, Celtic 3.
I'm going to have to agree with you as well.
Yeah. So let's do Group C, the quote-unquote group of death. Chelsea, Roma, Atleti, and Karabag. I'm going to give the stage to you, sir.
Yeah, I mean, this is obviously, as we mentioned with Sky, you know, I think it's the group of death that we saw when the draw was announced. I think we're going to see three great sides really compete for the knockout stage. I think those three will eventually go into a European spot. I don't see Karabag, unless be it a major shock in Baku or against someone, be it Roma, Atletico, or Chelsea, can really screw up their chances. But I think we're going to see those top three, Chelsea, Roma, and Atletico Madrid, go to respective European competitions. However, I think you have to give the benefit of the doubt to Chelsea. I think they have the strong enough team to really win this group. I think Antonio Conte, you know, can really know what to get the best out of his team, especially in the Champions League. Mm-hmm. It's going to be really a big battle of death, that's for sure. Having to face off in the Premier League, in the FA Cup, in the Champions League, and so forth. I'm going to say they're going to win the group. I'm going to say Atletico are just slightly better than Roma. I think they're going to finish second. I see Roma getting transferred into the Europa League.
Okay, I'm actually going to disagree with you here. I'm going to actually take Atleti to win the group, and I'm going to take Chelsea to finish second with Roma going to Europa. And the only reason is my concern at Chelsea is the depth of the squad. Do they have enough horses to play in all the competitions that they're going to be in between now and the end of December? That is, for me, concerning. If you're wearing your players thin, running them out there twice a week, and you've really got an A squad with no B squad, that I think is going to be difficult. And I think a guy like Diego Simeone, who's been down this road time and time and time and time again, probably even more frequently than Antonio Conte himself, I think Atleti is better equipped to handle the rigors of multiple competitions, seeing that the whole squad has been there before. So, but again, I think this will be a pretty close group. I think this Roma side right now, under Di Francesco, just has not figured it out yet. And I think they're having a tough time, Rob, solving the loss of Mohamed Salah. I think that is really weighing heavily right now on the side, and it's kind of translating into their domestic play. So, I do think all of these teams, though, are way better than Karabag, and regardless of the travel to Azerbaijan, I think they'll be the other teams will do just fine. So for me, it'll be Atleti first, Chelsea second, and Roma off to Europa. Group D, where Rob, you and I get at it right away, man. Juve, Barca, Olympiacos, Sporting. Do you want to give your 2 cents first?
Oh, you go first.
All right, I'll go first. The Chiellini durability concerns me. The fact that Bonucci is no longer there, and I think let's be honest. Chiellini doesn't work as well without Bonucci, and Bonucci does not work as well without Chiellini. We've seen it now. We've seen proof of that on AC Milan. We've seen proof of that on Juventus, and we've seen proof of it at the national team, where there was a chance they were going to get together, and then all of a sudden Chiellini picked up his injury. So I still think Juve has not completely solved this riddle out of the back as of yet. The Douglas Costa addition is huge, in my opinion. I don't think people realize how big adding Douglas Costa to this team really, really is. And as soon as Max Allegri figures it out, and even the Bernardeschi edition, as soon as Max Allegri figures out how to get these guys on the pitch ahead of guys like Cuadrado and even Mario Mandzukic to an extent, they're going to be incredibly, incredibly, incredibly dangerous moving forward in all competitions. However, this match is tomorrow, so they're not going to get that chance tomorrow. And I think, like what we said with Scott, that I think we see a Barca victory coming up tomorrow. However, these are going to be the two teams moving forward. And I think the Barca victory tomorrow is going to play into who's going to win the group. I think it's going to be Barca. I think it's going to be Juve second. And I think it's going to be Sporting third. Olympiacos actually fired their head coach, if I read that correctly earlier today. Yep. And the guy was on, like, I think a four-game winning streak. Or he hadn't lost a match yet this season. It was some crazy number. I saw the story, and I should have read into it a little bit deeper. But there's so much turmoil when you do something like that, especially with a team that is playing successfully like that, that there's no way Olympiacos finishes third. This is going to be Sporting third, Olympiacos fourth for me, Rob.
I think that first game against Barcelona and Juventus is going to determine everything. Obviously, these guys don't face in the away leg until November, so that's 2 months away, and a lot of things can change within both clubs within that. That time period. Mm-hmm. But I think the winner of this one, especially this one, will take a huge step into winning their group. And I'm going to have to agree with you, obviously, to your disgust. I think Barcelona will win their group. I think Juventus, albeit with all the depth that they have, you know, I think they don't have enough to really... Maybe the game against Sporting Olympiacos will really give them a bit of struggles, maybe a draw in one of those games. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I think I see Barcelona winning this group and Juventus going second, with Sporting going to the Europa League.
Yeah, I wanted to give you the honors on this one because I know you're the Barca guy and I'm the Juve guy, so I didn't want to be that guy, you know. So Group E, I'm going to give the keys to the car to you first, sir. Liverpool, Sevilla, Spartak Moscow, and Maribor.
Yeah, I think this is one of those straightforward groups. I think you know, with Spartak Moscow being the top seed, winning the Russian Premier League, I think that's the only advantage they would get of being their leader in the group. However, having said that, I think Sevilla and Liverpool will really fight for that. I think what we're going to see from Liverpool is going to be interesting. If we see the Liverpool that beat Arsenal a couple of weeks ago, or the one that lost to Manchester City 5-0 a couple of days ago. So, and the Sevilla side is also not really that... that much of a pushover as well. They got really talented, really young, great players. So it's gonna be a really close battle between these two teams for the group. Yeah. But I think just given on depth and perhaps maybe having a better team on paper, I think I have to give the advantage to Liverpool to win this group. I think they just have that little bit much more than Sevilla that they could win this group. And I think Sevilla will go second. I think Spartak Moscow being the third place team going to Europa.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I think right now there was talk earlier today that Philo Coutinho is going to actually play in this matchup for Liverpool against Sevilla coming up on the Wednesday. So I think that's a great sign for them. Obviously, the red card for Sadio Mane in the league play is not going to carry over into Champions League. So you're going to have a full side. You're going to have a Mo Salah who seems to be playing pretty well right now, although you couldn't tell from the 5-0 drubbing to Man City. But again, we discussed that matchup a little while ago. So I think I agree with you. Liverpool, Sevilla, it's going to be very, very close. I think the matchup that we're going to see on Wednesday is going to be very close. And, you know, Sevilla, you know, don't take anything away from the fact that many of these players have won European competitions. They're multiple exactly. Europa League winners. They bring back Ever Banega, who I thought was a huge part. They managed to hold on to Steven Zanzi to the chagrin of Juventus fans. This is a good Sevilla side, and I think it's going to be a great matchup. I do think Liverpool, though, has a little bit more, and I think we'll take it in the end. Sevilla second, and like you said, Spartak Moscow, the Russian champions, will definitely go on to the Europa League. Group F. Napoli, Manchester City, Feyenoord, Shakhtar Donetsk. For me, Rob, I think this is straightforward in the same way that the Group E is. where the top two teams are pretty certain in City and Napoli. We're going to have to see what that matchup brings. I think they match up on day two of this particular group.
Day three.
Is it day three? So, again,
yeah, so we have to wait till next month.
We've got a situation, again, where we could see two 6-point teams face each other for the top of the group in Napoli and City. I think they're going to be fireworks like we talked about with Scott earlier. Cool. When these two teams, yeah, it's going to be, man, you're going to need a helmet to watch this game.
Yeah, this game has to be on like whatever, the Fox or ESPN, because this is really, this is as entertaining as you can get. I mean, yeah, just the quality of both these teams and how they play, I think, is just must-see TV.
I actually think that this game could be more entertaining than the Juve-Barca game we see tomorrow. You know, just from the high-flying aspect of it, Rob, where...
It seems close.
Yeah, really close. I think it's just that these two teams are so attacking-minded that I think you could see a fantastic game.
Yeah, this will have a lot of goals. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if it ends like
3-3.
Like a ridiculous number, like 3-3 or 5-4 or 4-3, anything like that.
Yeah, exactly. So, but having said that, you know, I guess we're going to have to pick a winner of this group. I'm not going to be the homer. I'm going to pick City to win this group because they're ultra, ultra talented. Napoli would definitely finish second. And I think the battle, as much as we talk about the battle for the top of this group, the battle for third place between Feyenoord and Shakhtar Donetsk is going to be just as entertaining, just as tasty. I think it'll be Donetsk in the end. I think that they'll be the ones that will move on, but definitely going to be another one of those must-see battles, kind of the battle within the battle, Rob.
Definitely. I'm going to have to agree with you there. I think City will finish second. I think Napoli will finish... Sorry, I think Manchester City will finish first, and I think Napoli will finish second, and I think Shakhtar Donetsk will head to the Europa League. But boy, imagine if those roles are reversed between City and Napoli.
What would that mean
for Guardiola?
Oh, it would be huge. People would really start to ask questions of Guardiola, and then like we had talked about with you know, with some of the other matchups, you finish second in a group, you're going to get the top team. Everyone's going to hope for the Group G winner, no matter what, because you're going to get either. There's just some ridiculous teams that we're talking about right now that would win their groups that you don't want to face in the next round. So,
definitely.
So Group G.
This is the group that I think if you do finish second, that you want to face in the round of 16. We have Besiktas, Leipzig, Monaco, and Porto. And boy, is this really tough to call. like you said, it's one of the most balanced and even groups out there in the Champions League. Boy, how great is it that we have Leipzig taking on Monaco to start off the group? I think that one's going to really decide a lot of things. I think both these teams are just slightly more talented than Besiktas and Porto as well, although those teams are also, you know, not pushovers and should really be respected. But I think given the success that Monaco has given so far recently, even with the losses with Mbappe, with Bernardo Silva, with Bakayoko, among other players, this team is still ultra-talented. And when you have a really good informed Falcao leading this team, you know, it could do some damage moving forward. However, I am going to say that Leipzig wins this group. I think that they just slightly have a bit more advantage than Monaco, as we've seen in the Bundesliga, as we saw last season, to really demonstrate to the to basically Europe in their maiden voyage on European competition of what they're capable of doing. So I think Leipzig will win this group. I think Monaco will go second. And that battle between Besiktas and Porto is just going to be as tough than Leipzig and Monaco. But I'm going to say Porto will go to the Europa League just because on talent alone that they really have a more stronger team than Besiktas. But also, you can't really underestimate this Besiktas guy as well. I mean, they got players such as Pepe that they got last season, in the transfer window, from Real Madrid. I mean, they got players such as Alvaro Negredo, as we've seen, and Gary Medel as well. So, you know, this is really, really the group of death, honestly. If it's not that one with Chelsea, Roma, and Atletico Madrid, it's easily this one, don't you think?
Definitely, no doubt about it. And I, you know, I thought I was going to be the guy on the edge by saying Leipzig was going to win this group, but you beat me to the punch. again, and I kind of hinted at it with Scott a little bit, the form currently of Timo Werner has been ridiculous ever since the Confederations Cup, and moving forward, he's been on fire, and he's translated it into some great play to start the season now for Leipzig in the Bundesliga, and I think between that and the dismantling of Monaco, I think Monaco is still an excellent, excellent side, and Radamel Falcao seems to get younger every year instead of older, but I think Leipzig is going to just be a little too tough for them, for Monaco moving forward and win the group. Monaco definitely second, and Porto's going to finish third, and I know we just talked about a tough third-place battle between Feyenoord and Shakhtar Donetsk. Same thing here. Porto, obviously with Iker Casillas in goal, going to be experienced, but you know, Besiktas, anytime you've got to go to Turkey to play a match, it's going to be an absolute nightmare. We've seen Juventus get the short end of the stick there once upon a time. You know, not necessarily at Besiktas. I believe that was at I think that wasn't that at Besiktas? Were they? No, it was Rob, you're killing me. I'm trying to remember the name of the Turkish side that they lost to, that where they had to play the game like the next day because the field conditions were so bad. It'll come to me eventually.
Karabache?
I'm sorry?
No, it was Besiktas, wasn't it?
I don't think it was. Now I've got to go and look it up. I'll have to go and look it up. But again, so going to Turkey and winning there is going to be very, very difficult for all these teams. But I agree with you. Leipzig number one, Monaco second, Porto to the Europa, and Besiktas fourth. Group H, last group that we're going to discuss tonight is another. You know, it's shaped similarly to that Group C, that Chelsea, Roma, Madrid, Atletico Madrid. And, of course, there's another Madrid side here. It's Tottenham Hotspur, Borussia Dortmund, Real Madrid, and Apoel. Apoel clearly fourth place here. You know, they're definitely not anywhere near the class of the other two teams, or the other three teams. You know, this Dortmund side, you've got to love them. As injured as they often are, they are so good with their young players that they just give everyone a challenge every single week. They're riding right now at the top of the Bundesliga. I know it's early in the season, but Real Madrid has actually stumbled over the last week. Spurs have been stumbling out of the gate here in the EPL, and Dortmund really look at the top of their game. However, to be the champ, you got to beat the champ, and I don't necessarily see these guys beating Real Madrid in group play. So for me, Real Madrid wins this group, but I do think Borussia Dortmund is going to finish second here, but it'll be very tight. Dortmund actually surprised last year, if you remember, winning their group over Real Madrid, if I remember correctly, and I think Spurs over to the Europa, where I think Spurs will do well, and it wouldn't shock me if Spurs ended up in the final of the Europa League, but I think they're going to face that final against AC Milan, and I think that's going to be a tough call. But so again, Madrid first, Dortmund second, Spurs third, Apoel fourth for me, Rob.
I'm going to have to agree with you as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so let's. I do want to look back at the Juve Champions League. I do want to find that, Rob. So I don't know if do you have the matches of the week loaded up in front of you?
I do.
All right. I was wondering if you could kick them off for us while it drives me nuts and I have to find that Juve from a few years ago.
Yeah, go ahead. Don't worry.
So go ahead and why don't you start us off with the first matchup, which is the Atleti Roma one.
Yeah, absolutely. Roma against Atletico Tuesday at 2:45 p.m. This game will be at the Stadio Olimpico. I think this is going to be one of the really good matches to really decide that battle between Chelsea to qualify to the knockout stage. I'm gonna have to give the advantage to Atletico. I think they're gonna go out here with an away win. I think the team that we saw with Diego Simeone to start the season looks very, very impressive. And I think I'm going to give the victory for them here. 2-1 Atletico.
You know, I'm going to take the exact same scoreline as you. I agree with you 100%. This Roma side, they look decent, but they don't look good. They don't look as good as they used to look last year, and it's concerning to me. So Atleti does look pretty good to open the season here, so I do think that's going to be the way. By the way, the team that they had lost to, Rob, was Galatasaray. It wasn't Besiktas.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was, and I do remember that was a pretty tough pill to swallow with the weather. Okay, let's look at probably the biggest match of the week now, Rob. And we talked about it with Scott. We've talked about it amongst each other. And that is Barcelona-Juventus. That is on Tuesday, 2:45 at the Nou Camp. Barca obviously leading the La Liga in this early season. Juve doing the same over in Italy in the Serie A. We talked about the players that are going to be missing from this particular one already with Scott, where we talked about Otto Tarán is out. Sami Khedira is listed as out right now. Mario Mandzukic, Giorgio Chiellini, Rafinha currently is carrying a knee injury, and Sergio Roberto is carrying a knee injury. Don't know if they will play or not. I don't have the updated statistics on them. But I do think that Barca right now is going to be a little too tough. Also, for me personally, I feel like Gigi Buffon has been a little shaky in recent performances, both for the club and country. So
you think age is getting to him? Sorry, Joe.
I think it is starting to get to him a little bit. And I also think that the quality of the defense in front of him, I think the loss of Bonucci, they still haven't figured that part out yet. So, between all of that, I do think that Barca will finally score a competitive goal against Juventus for the first time in a couple of years. But sadly, but I think it'll be 2-1 Barca over Juve. How about you, sir?
One nil Barca.
Even closer. I just don't. It's interesting, but I just don't think you're going to keep Dybala off the score sheet. That's my only thing. So, but at
it's
what
gonna
cost?
It's going to be tough, but I think it's going to be really close.
Sure. You want to do Liverpool Sevilla real quick?
Absolutely. Liverpool taking on Sevilla. This game will be at Anfield Wednesday at 2:45 p.m. Yeah, I mean, one of these other games that I think will decide a group winner and the runners up. It's going to be really interesting to see how Liverpool can recover after their 5-0 drubbing against Manchester City. But I think we're going to see a close game in this one, Joe. I think Barisa's men can really give a shock, if that's even the proper term to use, against Liverpool. I'm going to say a draw in this one. I'm going to say 2-2.
I was thinking about if this game would be much higher scoring. I do like Liverpool at home at this one. I do like Liverpool at Anfield. Just looking at the injury list real quick, Adam Lallana is going to be out. Obviously, the talks of Coutinho possibly playing in this one. Really, nothing to speak of on the Sevilla side in terms of injuries. Soria has a finger injury, which I don't think will matter much in this one. But in the end, I do think Liverpool's going to be a little too tough at home for them. So I'm going to take Liverpool with 2-0. This will be the first time you and I disagree. So let's go over to Germany, where on Wednesday, RB Leipzig. By the way, all these starts are 2:45 p.m. on the Champions League. RB Leipzig, Monaco, Wednesday, 2:45 p.m. Obviously, Leipzig with their first time into European competition after the year before last earning promotion, and last year giving Bayern Munich a little bit of a run for their money in the Bundesliga before finishing second overall. Not much to speak of in terms of injuries in this one, Rob. Both teams look pretty healthy coming in. Monaco look like they are definitely playing very, very well. They're at the top of the league right now with PSG. Only separated, I believe, if I remember correctly. Actually, no, I'm sorry. They did drop points on the weekend, so they are going to be behind to PSG. But still a quality side. But again, like I had hinted to with Scott, I think this Leipzig side is really playing well at the moment, and I don't see them dropping this match or points here. I'm going to take Leipzig in a 2-1 victory here at home. How about you?
I think I'm going to say the same thing, 2-1 to Leipzig.
Yep, so that'll be a fun one to watch. Unfortunately, the other one on this day is going to be probably even more fun to watch, and that is going to be the Tottenham-Dortmund matchup Wednesday, 2:45 p.m. As we had talked about earlier, Dele Alli out of this one for a red card infraction. Eric Lamela will not play in this one. Dortmund is riddled with injuries between Guerrero, Royce, Andre Schürrle. Everyone has questions about how Christian Pulisic will play in this one. But I think in the end, there's so many weapons at Dortmund that I don't see them losing this one. I actually am going to take Dortmund in a 3-1 victory here. I think there's going to be a few goals in this one. And I think they'll be the beneficiary of the goals. So how about you, Rob?
2-1 Dortmund.
2-1 Dortmund. So we both got the same result, different score. Looking ahead, we've got a couple of Europa League matchups to talk about. Europa League always kicks off the Thursday when Champions League plays, and We've got a few good ones that we've picked out for you. There are absolutely too many groups to speak of. So let's just jump right into the predictions. We have Atalanta Everton Thursday at 3:00, and this one's going to be played. Actually, I believe they're at a different stadium on this one. I will have to look at this. Spinazzola is going to be out for Atalanta, obviously after playing well for the national team. Yannick Bolasie is going to be missing. Seamus Coleman will be missing from this one. Funes Mori is going to be out of this one for Everton as well. So we've got a few injuries to speak of on both sides. Key injuries, I would say. Atalanta has not looked the same, but when can you ever count Papu Gomez out? So I'm going to take Atalanta at home in this one in a 2-1 victory for me. How about you, Rob?
2-2.
2-2. You know, and just Everton did not look well on the weekend. And for me, the biggest prediction, the best production they're getting is out of Wayne Rooney. So just curious to see if they can turn this around. But going to be a tough side to see, that's for sure. Let's talk about the newcomers to the Europa League. Arsenal against FC Cologne. Obviously, Arsenal turning their lives around on the weekend with a victory at home. And this Cologne side really not playing well at all, in my opinion, Rob. What do you got to say about this one?
I mean, this is going to be really a side of which one can drive their fans more nuts, yeah. Given their start of the season. But I think Arsenal should do this. I think they have the advantage, and hopefully the team, to beat this Cologne side, who are really not looking good so far this season. I'm going to say Arsenal 2-0.
2-0. I'm actually going to take Arsenal in a 3-0 victory on this one. Cologne is going to regret letting Anthony Modeste leave the squad.
Definitely. Yeah, Arsenal can only thank themselves that they didn't let go of Alexis as much as Alexis wanted to.
Exactly. So the last one, which I think is another tasty one in the Europa League, is the Hertha Berlin Athletic Bilbao matchup on Thursday at 3:00. Again, two above average sides for their respective leagues. Berlin actually, I can't remember if they won or they drew on the weekend. I just can't remember now. I did see the game. They were playing against Werder Bremen. And I just can't remember the results, so I'm going to go back and look at that quickly. But Hertha Berlin playing at home on this one, Rob. I'm going to go first, and I'm going to take Berlin in a 2-1 victory in this particular matchup. How about you, sir?
I'm going to say 1-0 Hertha Berlin.
1-0 Hertha, and they did draw Werder Bremen at home on the weekend 1-1. So just to give you that. So again, our matchups for the week ahead: Roma Atleti Tuesday 2:45 p.m. Barca Juve Tuesday 2:45 p.m. Liverpool Sevilla Wednesday 2:45 p.m. Leipzig Monaco Wednesday 2:45 p.m. Spurs and Dortmund on Wednesday at 2:45 p.m. Then on Thursday we have three Europa League matchups: Atalanta Everton, Arsenal Cologne, and Hertha Berlin Athletic Bilbao. Those are all at 3:00 as well. And that is our week ahead. Next week we will return. We will return our regular league coverage in conjunction with Rob. Just wanted to give you the quick rundown according to SkyBet in terms of the Champions League winners, the odds on winning the Champions League. Real Madrid currently favored to three-peat at 4-1. PSG is at 6-1. Barca 13-2. Bayern Munich 13-2. City and United both at 11-1. Chelsea and Juve at 14-1. Atleti at 20-1, and Liverpool at 22-1. We'll round out your top 10 for odds of winning. Just outside are Napoli, Dortmund, Tottenham, Monaco, Leipzig, and Sevilla. So, those are your odds, Rob. You've got Madrid winning this one again.
I mean, you can't really go against them, can you? You want to, but it's really hard. Yeah, why not? Let's see them win. Let's see them go for a three-peat.
I'm good.
If there is a team that I think can really knock them off their perch, and hopefully that we can see that, you know, I think PSG has to be that team, and I think, given the amount of quality stars and the amount of money that they've spent on these players, that they have to look and really focus on the Champions League, and an elimination early on will really raise some questions moving forward.
Yeah. I hate to say that. I don't want to say Real Madrid is going to win, so I'm not going to say it. I'm going to go out on the limb and I'm going to say PSG win the Champions League. And, you know, this is the kind of thing where you make that bold prediction. And if it comes true, then you take this tape, you rewind it, and you play it over and over and over again for another year. Because you're the guy that said that PSG won. So I'm going to take PSG to win the 2017-2018 Champions League. And then when I'm wrong, who cares? So, so Rob, let's go back. And
people who bet on you, that's the people who care.
Listen, if you're betting with my predictions, you are an utter fool. You know, I don't even bet on my predictions. Let's get one thing straight. So, but again, it's for entertainment purposes only. So keep that in mind. Rob, let's go back and review the trivia question.
Absolutely.
All right. So Dele Alli became the eighth player to score 30 Premier League goals before his 22nd birthday. Can you name the other seven?
I can.
Okay.
All right. The first one that came out of my mind was Romelu Lukaku.
Romelu Lukaku, 41 goals, is on the list.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Another one that came up to me was Michael Owen.
Michael Owen is second on the list at 73 goals.
Right. Ryan Giggs.
Ryan Giggs is not on the list.
Oh, okay. Cristiano Ronaldo?
Cristiano Ronaldo, 33 goals before his 22nd birthday.
Okay, this one, now I'm really starting to worry.
There's one more.
No. Wayne Rooney.
Wayne Rooney, 59 goals before his 22nd birthday. I was going to say, there's one more that I'd be shocked if you didn't get. So the ones you've got so far, Michael Owen, who is number two on the list. Wayne Rooney is number three on the list. Romelu Lukaku, number five on the list. And Cristiano Ronaldo, number six on the list. You have three more, including the number one, the most goals scored before turning 22 years old.
Robbie Savage?
Robbie Savage is not on the list. And I've seen this name before. I just can't place where he played.
Frank Lampard?
No.
No. Is it English? Are they all English?
Yes, and yes. All three of them are Englishmen.
All three of them are English players.
And this is according to Bleacher Report, too. That's where I'm getting my information from. So if it's wrong, call
Harry Kane. Harry Kane.
Harry Kane is not on the list.
Oh, okay.
I'll give you number one.
Go ahead.
Robbie Fowler.
I knew it was – I was thinking Robbie.
Yeah.
But I forgot his last name. Okay, that's
82
one.
Goals.
82 goals, yeah. I think I've seen that list before, though. So mm-hmm. I'm trying to remember. Can you give me a hint on the clubs?
Let me look up this one player here now for you so I can give you a little hint on this one. Hang on a second. Okay, let's see what we find on this one. Okay, this particular player is retired. He played from he's a player and a former manager. He played from 1991 to 2007. Clubs that are credited to his name are in his senior career: Norwich, Blackburn, Chelsea, Celtic, Birmingham City, Villa, and Wroxham. He also played for the English U21s, England B, and the English national team, where he only played one game in 1997. Scored 63 goals for Celtic, scored 47 goals and 130 appearances for Blackburn Rovers between 94 and 99.
I was going to say Alan Shearer.
No.
Is that a name?
No.
No. I give up. Who is it?
Okay, that one is, and he's, what number is he on the list here? 1, 2, 3, 4. Chris Sutton.
Chris Sutton, 40, I wouldn't have got that.
Scored 46 goals before his 22nd birthday. The last player on the list, which let me call up his information here now so I can give it to you, is another English footballer, played at Leicester. He's played from 1994. He just retired recently after playing for Bolton Wanderers, retired in 2016. Played for Leicester, Liverpool, Birmingham City, Wigan, Aston Villa, Newcastle Jets, and Bolton Wanderers. He was also on the
I know this. Emil Heskey?
Emil Heskey, 31 goals before his 22nd birthday. So, the list that Dele Alli joined by scoring his 30th goal before his 22nd birthday. Emil Heskey at 31, Cristiano Ronaldo at 33, Romelu Lukaku at 41, Chris Sutton at 46, Wayne Rooney, 59 goals, Michael Owen, 73, and the leader in the clubhouse, Robbie Fowler, 82 goals scored before his 22nd birthday. So, there you go. All right, so I think with everything off the docket here, Rob, we're ready to close it out. What do you think?
Sounds good.
All right, let's do it. So we're off and running in our fifth year of Low Limit Football, which is great to be around to do it. So for episode 175 of Low Limit Football, special thanks again to Scott Nichols from Beyond the Pitch for joining us tonight. Next week, we will recap the UEFA Champions League. We'll recap the Europa League, and we'll get back into talking about our leagues and the coverage that is involved in with them. So for episode 175 of Low Limit Football, I'm Joe Uccello.
I'm Roberto Rojas.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and good night.